Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're getting into a really bizarre story out of 1990s Texas. It's about food, but maybe not in the way you'd expect.
No, definitely not. It's this strange case that became a kind of urban legend, but it's actually documented. The state health records call it the Supadelic Incident.
Yeah, that name alone tells you something's up. Our mission today really is to explore this collision between marketing genius and, something deeply unsettling.
We're looking at Frankie Bowman and his diner, Supadelic. We've pulled together firsthand accounts from people who ate there, the official inspection notes, that's the factual backbone, and also looked at studies on, believe it or not, culinary folklore and something called disgust marketing.
And the hook, the thing that just grabs you, is this massive contradiction. Frankie's soup place, Supadelic, people swore the soup was amazing, like truly addicted. They couldn't get enough.
Mm-hmm.
But then the truth comes out, and the reports call the same soup truly disgusting. How does that even happen?
Exactly. How could it be both? Irresistible and repulsive. That's the core question we're digging into.
And for you listening, this isn't just some gross-out story. It's actually a fascinating look at how reputation works.
Right. It shows how what people whisper about a place, the rumors, can totally overshadow the actual product or the advertising. It's about the power of taboo, really.
Okay, let's dive into that obsession first.
Yeah.
This ridiculously expensive soup and how Frankie Bowman hooked people. So try to picture it. 1990s Texas. It's not some fancy downtown restaurant. We're talking a small, kind of plain-looking diner. Its whole thing was soup. Just soup.
But the name, Supadelic, it hints at something more, doesn't it? Something a bit out there.
Totally. And
yeah.
The sources, they describe this like intense vibe among the customers. People were literally lining up down the street, desperate for their bowl. Some folks went every single day.
Which is wild for soup. And what's really interesting right off the bat is how Frankie played with value. Soup is, you know, usually pretty humble stuff, comfort food.
Yeah, cheap.
Exactly. But he turned it into this exclusive premium thing. His main slogan, it was everywhere, apparently. Radio, signs. It was bold. One sip and you'll be hooked forever.
Just flat out guarantees addiction.
Pretty much. And then there's the price. Get this. $49 for a bowl of soup.
In the 90s. That's insane. You could get a fancy steak dinner for that.
Right. But here's the kicker. The price didn't push people away. It actually drew them in. It added to the whole mystery, the allure.
So the high price was part of the marketing.
Absolutely. It's a psychological play. You see that price, $49, and you automatically think, wow, this must be incredible. There must be some secret, some magic ingredient. It anchors your perception of value way up high.
And once you've paid that much,
you're invested. Mm-hmm. It's the sunk cost idea. You've dropped serious cash, so you're psychologically primed to believe it's amazing to justify the cost. It sort of overrides your rational brain asking, wait, is soup really worth $50?
Okay, so the price wasn't just a price. It was like a lever for belief.
Precisely. It signaled exclusivity, a special experience. And the customer accounts we have backed this up completely. People said the flavor was just addictive. They couldn't explain why it was so good, just that they needed more.
They couldn't describe it like, oh, it's got hints of.
Nope. That's key. If they could pin it down, it tastes like saffron and unicorn tears.
Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes understandable, maybe even replicable. But because it was this unidentifiable, compelling flavor, it felt mysterious, almost like a drug.
Which plays right into his slogan.
Textbook addiction marketing. It wasn't about actual chemical addiction, you know, like nicotine. It was psychological. He'd built this perfect trap.
What were the pieces of that trap then, psychologically speaking?
Well, you've got the mystery, the secret broth. You've got the super high cost, which validates the effort and makes it feel exclusive. And you've got the promise of guaranteed compulsion from the slogan. He wasn't just selling soup. He was selling the certainty of being hooked.
Wow.
People weren't just chasing the taste. They were chasing the answer to why it tasted that way, why they couldn't stop.
The sources even mentioned people eating it for breakfast, coming back multiple times a day, just chasing that initial feeling, trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And Frankie, whenever anyone asked him, what's the secret, man? He apparently just had this cool, collected answer.
Yeah, what did he say?
He'd just give a little smile, totally confident, and say, it's my secret broth, baby.
Huh. Okay. So, confirms there is a secret. Makes you feel special for being in on it, but tells you absolutely nothing.
Exactly. Keeps him in control. He's the wizard. Everyone else is just begging for another hit of his magic potion. The mystery was the product, in a way.
That branding, that slogan, it really stuck. It got into people's heads. Before we get to the health inspector showing up, we should probably touch on that jingle again.
Yeah, that repetitive hook is powerful. It just lodges itself in your memory.
Okay, let's try and recreate that vibe. Hmm. Think kind of lo-fi, 90s radio spot. Simple, maybe a bit cheesy, but catchy. Ready?
Let's hear it.
The flavor calls you, the price commands you.
One sip and you'll be hooked forever. See, it just drills in. It's not asking. It's telling you what's going to happen.
It felt unstoppable, this whole operation. High price, high mystery, catchy slogan. But, you know, reality always has a way of intruding, especially when public health is involved.
Okay, so Supadelic is killing it. It's this weird, expensive phenomenon. But then the system kicks in. Enter the guy who bursts the bubble, Health Inspector Bill Snifferton. Or sometimes the records say Snifton.
Yeah, Snifferton or Snifton, the records vary slightly. His visit starts out as totally routine. It was a surprise inspection, which is standard. But he wasn't acting on a complaint or anything, just doing his job, checking the boxes for sanitation.
And standard procedure means he has to taste the food, right?
That's right. You don't just look around. You sample what's being served to the public.
And this is where it gets weird, because Bill tries the famous $49 soup. And according to his own report, he loved it.
Yeah, he confirmed the flavor, that addictive quality everyone was talking about. He got it. Even as a professional inspector, he couldn't deny it tasted.
Well, compelling.
Okay, so the taste checks out, but...
But there was the smell. He noted down that something about the smell felt off, just wrong. It wasn't overpowering, maybe hidden by spices, but it was there. A faint background note that didn't match the delicious taste.
How does that work? Your nose says one thing, your tongue says another, especially for a trained inspector.
It's a huge red flag in public health. Taste can be easily tricked, you know? Lots of salt, fat, sugar, strong spices, they can cover up underlying issues. Smell is often harder to fool when it comes to spoilage or, well, contamination.
Okay.
So that difference, taste versus smell, that's a trigger for a deeper look. His training tells him, doesn't matter how good it tastes, if it smells wrong, investigate. The potential hazard overrides the pleasant taste. Duty calls.
But he couldn't immediately shut the place down based on just a smell, right?
Mm.
Especially if the kitchen looked clean.
Correct. The initial walkthrough, the visible stuff, counters, fridges, prep areas, it all seemed okay. Met the basic standards. No obvious violations he could write up right then and there.
But the smell stuck with him.
It did. That discrepancy, that nagging off odor. It bothered him. So he decided to go back.
After hours, like sneak back in.
Pretty much. The report suggests a clandestine return. Diner's closed, lights are off, doors locked. Bill Snifferton goes back, not officially, but driven by that professional instinct that something wasn't right. This is where it shifts from routine inspection to, like, detective work.
Mm. Okay, so he's back inside. What does he find? Does the kitchen look different after closing?
At first, no. It confirms the earlier check. Everything looks clean, wiped down, stored properly. You know, the stuff you do to pass inspection. It looked like a normal, compliant kitchen.
But he knew the smell wasn't coming from the normal kitchen operations.
Right. He was looking for something hidden, something out of place, and then he saw it. Tucked away in a back corner, easy to miss. A small, plain door. And on it, just one word. Private.
The classic keep-out sign.
Exactly. In these kinds of cases, the private spaces are often where the real story is,
right,
where the carefully maintained public image ends and the operational reality begins.
So he heads for the door. Does he just kick it in?
No, something else guided him. The sources mention an auditory cue, a sound.
What sound?
The sound of dripping water. Just a faint, steady drip, drip. Coming from behind that private door.
Okay, that's creepy. Like something out of a horror movie.
It definitely adds to the suspense. He's following the sound, moving away from the clean public kitchen, through this hidden door, deeper into whatever was back there, following the drip, heading towards the source of that weird smell that didn't match the amazing taste.
He must have known he was getting close to something. Something big. The real secret of the secret broth. Okay, this is it. The moment of truth.
Hmm.
Bill follows the dripping sound, the faint smell, pushes through that private door, and steps into whatever was back there. And what he saw next, well, this is the image that burned itself into the state records and local legend.
Yeah, the description in the report is just stark. It hits you with this immediate sense of shock, of wrongness. Bill sees Frankie Bowman, the owner, the soup guru, standing there, standing over a toilet, a regular porcelain toilet.
Wait, a toilet, not like a big soup vat or something.
No, a toilet. And it gets worse. Frankie wasn't just standing near it. He was holding a huge ladle,
like industrial kitchen size.
Oh, no.
And the report states, quite clearly, he was scooping the soup directly from the bowl.
From the toilet bowl. Are you serious?
Directly from the toilet bowl. That's the image. The $49 a bowl, addictive, raved about soup being ladled out of a toilet.
Wow. Okay. That explains the truly disgusting part of the reports.
It's the ultimate collision, isn't it? The extreme price signaling luxury, the taste people couldn't get enough of, and then the source. The most fundamentally unclean place imaginable in a food context. The cognitive dissonance is just overwhelming. It instantly reframes every single bowl ever served.
Yeah, no kidding. So from a health perspective, I mean, that's beyond just unsanitary. Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We have to be clear about the facts here based on the Supadelic Incident report. Using a toilet as any kind of food vessel is a catastrophic sanitation failure. It's a direct pathway for bacteria, pathogens, human waste. I mean, it's unthinkable. It poses an immediate and severe public health risk. Closing the place down wasn't even a question at that point. It was mandatory.
Right. But what makes this story stick, what makes it legendary, isn't just the violation code. It's Frankie's reaction, isn't it?
Exactly. Because before Bill Snifferton could even react, pull out his badge, say anything, Frankie turns around.
Is he freaking out, trying to hide it?
No, that's the chilling part. He turns around and he smiles.
He smiled. While holding a ladle, he just dipped in a toilet.
A full, apparently unashamed smile. No shock, no embarrassment, no attempt to explain it away.
What does that even mean?
That smile is everything. It tells you this wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a desperate shortcut. It was intentional. He was, in some twisted way, proud of his method. It suggests that this horrifying source was the secret ingredient. It was part of the process, maybe even what he thought made it special.
That connects back to the weird smell Bill noticed, maybe.
Potentially.
Yeah.
That underlying offness might have been part of the profile. And Frankie owned it. And then he delivered the line, the quote that seals the whole nightmare.
Lived with that smile, no shame.
Just pure, chilling confidence. He looks at the health inspector who just caught him red-handed, or maybe ladle-handed, and says, "Told you it's my secret broth."
Wow. Just wow.
Allowing a brief pause.
He owned it. He literally owned the fact that his secret ingredient was toilet water suit.
That line basically confirms the entire premise of his marketing. The secret was the taboo. The secret was the repulsive source. He wasn't hiding a crime. He was revealing his unique, disgusting, and apparently successful recipe. He turned contamination into a commodity.
Okay, so after that confrontation, Supadelic was done, obviously.
Yes. Instantly. Shuttered. Locked up for good. The whole incident, the discovery, the violation, it all got documented officially by the Texas State Health Board, and they gave it that name. The Supadelic Incident.
Which is kind of rare, right?
Yeah.
For an incident to get a specific title like that in official records.
It suggests the severity and the unique nature of the case. But here's where it gets interesting analytically. You have the official record, the Supadelic Incident Report, focused on sanitation codes, health risks, procedural stuff.
Dry, factual.
Right. But then you have what happened next. That local report, the story, it just exploded, became this huge urban legend spreading way beyond that town, that county, a campfire myth.
And the myth wasn't really about Section 4, Paragraph B of the health code, was it?
Not at all. The legend zooms in on the shocking details. The toilet, the ladle, Frankie's smile, that final quote. The record talks about why it was unsafe. The legend talks about why it was so addictive and so horrifyingly sourced.
They focus on different things. One is about rules, the other is about taboo and secrets.
Exactly. And what happened to Frankie Bowman himself adds to the legend. Did they arrest him? Did he go to trial?
The sources say he just vanished.
Poof. Gone. No trial. No public accountability that we know of. And that disappearance, that lack of closure, it's actually crucial for the story's survival.
How so? Why does him vanishing make the story stronger?
There's this idea in folklore studies, sometimes called erasure becomes the evidence. When the central figure disappears, like Frankie did, it creates a vacuum. There are no final facts, no definitive ending.
So people can just keep guessing.
Precisely. Was he a mad genius? Did the soup really have some magic property? Did he escape? That uncertainty keeps the legend alive, flexible, endlessly retellable. If he'd just gone to jail for health code violations, it becomes a boring, closed case. His vanishing act ensures the mystery endures, maybe even more than the restaurant did.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's get to the core of why this story specifically spread like wildfire. Why does a story about something disgusting travel faster and further than, say, Frankie's expensive ads about how great the soup was? Why are disgust myths so sticky?
It taps into something really primal. This idea of disgust marketing, or maybe just the inherent virality of disgust, it's linked to our survival instincts. Our brains are wired to pay very close attention to information about contamination, poison, disease vectors, things that can harm us.
Especially around food.
Absolutely. Food safety is fundamental. So when you hear a story involving food from a contaminated taboo source like a toilet, it triggers an immediate powerful alert in your brain.
Like a biological alarm bell.
Exactly. It's saying, warning, danger, remember this. That image of the ladle in the toilet becomes an incredibly potent memory hook. It bypasses all the fancy marketing and advertising because it feels like critical survival information.
So no catchy jingle can compete with that visceral yuck factor.
Not even close. The very thing that destroyed the business, the disgusting truth, is the exact same thing that guarantees its immortality as a story. The revulsion makes it unforgettable and highly shareable.
And you mentioned culinary folklore. How does this fit in?
Well, there's a long tradition of stories about secret ingredients. Usually the reveal is something exotic or maybe just surprisingly simple. This story takes that trope and gives it the darkest possible twist. The secret isn't just mundane, it's repulsive. It's a violation of the sacred trust between the person making the food and the person eating it.
It's like a cautionary tale, amplified to the extreme.
Totally. And it makes you, the listener, think about your own memory. Why is that image, Frankie, the ladle, the toilet, so much clearer and stickier than, say, the $49 price tag or the specific health code violated?
Because it's visceral.
Yeah.
It hits you on a gut level.
Exactly. Our brains prioritize sensory shock and taboo violation. The facts fade, but the disgusting image, the story endures. That single horrifying mental picture is why we're still talking about the Supadelic incident today. It proves that sometimes the most powerful brand story isn't the one you advertise. It's the secret you try to hide. #tag outro. So, wrapping this up, we've traced quite a path from this cleverly constructed marketing illusion built on high price and mystery.
Right, that $49 bowl.
To the stark, shocking reality hidden behind that private door. And finally, how the official record of a health violation morphed into this enduring viral myth fueled by disgust.
It really forces you to think about rumor versus record, doesn't it? The state has the facts. Sanitation failure, immediate closure. But culture remembers the feeling, the image, the story.
It remembers the ladle, the smile, Frankie's chilling confirmation. It remembers the unbelievable source of the supposedly irresistible flavor.
And it makes you wonder, in our world now, where stories spread instantly, maybe sometimes the legend of a failure, especially a really spectacular gross failure, maybe that story lasts longer and travels further than the business ever could have hoped to.
It's a provocative thought. The business is long gone, scrubbed clean, but the story, the image that lives on.
The ladle, silent witness to the secret broth.